right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We got another high-powered, high-caliber episode here of the Crypto 101 Podcast. I am your co-host, Bryce Paul, joined as always by my trusty compadre, Mr. Brendan Veman. Brendan, how are you doing today, man?
You know, it's hard to be doing bad when the crypto markets are doing so good.
Amen.
I am extremely excited. And man, do we have a really exciting podcast in store for everyone. So tune in, turn your phones to silence mode because you're not going to want to miss this one.
Yeah, we want all your attention. Every last drop of it. We know attention is a very scarce resource these days, but please give your undivided attention, ladies and gentlemen, to the front of the stage. Naveen Agnihotri is joining us today, who is the CEO of Cumberland Labs. He's building a ton of cool things, notably Trust App, which we want to talk about. But most importantly, we just want to get to know who Naveen is and why he's here in this space. So Naveen, welcome to the Crypto 101 Podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. So happy to be here.
Yeah, no, we love it. We love your energy already from chatting a little bit before the camera's rolling. I know this is going to be a great one. You know, you're very passionate about what you do. You're passionate about why you're here. So we want to learn a little bit about your background, even kind of like before crypto. I mean, you know, you were probably around, right? You know, had your career unfolding in some direction before crypto pulled you off into another direction. So we want to hear about that, kind of that story, if you will.
Absolutely. So I'm an engineer by training. I am probably older than a lot of your viewers. I got started in the early 90s doing engineering, and then I got sucked into AI, which actually sucked me into neuroscience. So I did my PhD in computational neuroscience from Columbia. I was a scientist at MIT for a few years, again, just studying how does the brain do things that, and the brain finds so easy doing things that AI and computers find so difficult. And so I spent some time building interesting neural networks, and I left MIT in 2005 to create a startup that was going to apply AI and neural networks to real-world problems. And that became a series of startups, all of whom were aimed at finding interesting uses of AI and broadly interesting uses of technology over the years, and name a type of AI, and I have probably done it, tried it, and I can tell you what works and what doesn't.
Wow.
Hey guys, TiVo here to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell all in one. That's right, 3-in-1 for triple the security. It's easy to install. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. It gives you keyless entry, so no more fumbling your keys when you have your hands full coming back from the grocery store. No more worry about the kids losing a house key. No more worry about a guest losing the house key or forgetting the passcode on your door. And for Airbnbers, it's a no-brainer as you can change the passcode at will between renters. It has available fingerprint recognition, and it has AI self-learning chip, so the more you use it, the more accurate it's going to be. You will have no anxiety with the battery charging. It is a rechargeable battery, and it lasts around 4 months, but don't worry, when it's low, it'll give you plenty of weeks' notice, and also, it always comes with a physical key as a backup. There's no monthly fee. Unlike other brands that charge you a monthly fee to get your backup recordings, they're always recorded locally and you will always have access. Customer support for the Eufy Video Lock is 24/7, so you don't have to worry about any issues you have, and it comes with an 18-month warranty. What I love about this product is it's truly all-in-one with the 3-in-1. You don't have to go out and buy multiple parts. It's all in this package with the Eufy Video Lock. So if you're interested in learning more, go on Amazon and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock. Again, that's EUFY Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock. Get complete control over your front door.
Real quick, just on the subject of AI, it's just really hot in the news right now, obviously. And OpenAI is building this whole ChatGPT model, and they recently like fired their CEO Sam Altman, like the board apparently, and then they rehired him or something. It was crazy. It was in the news. We don't need to go into it, but I want to kind of get your take on, did they discover something maybe dangerous, and so they decided, hey, we got to pull the plug on it. We got to fire this guy who's leading this dangerous research? Or what do you kind of think happened there, if you could entertain us?
Look, I am not privy to any information that you guys are not privy to. I know is whatever you have probably also read. But I can give you a little bit of color that I think you will not find in a lot of places. And that's, what does it really take to build AI? Right. These types of LLM models, they're fairly new. They got started when Google published the original Transformer paper in 2017. And since then, the sort of field of AI has really exploded in complexity. Right? Mm-hmm. And these large, complex models, it really takes a huge effort to train one of these models with hundreds of billions of parameters, right? And the thing is that before OpenAI, really nobody was doing it. There was no effort in 2018, 2019 to really train very, very large LLM models, mainly because you couldn't justify the cost. It's hard to estimate, but sort of standard industry estimates are somewhere between $100 million and $1 billion combined in terms of the amount of compute it takes and the amount of effort, human effort, that it takes to actually Wow. train one model like GPT-4. Right? And the thing is, if you're going to spend $1 billion, and the fact about AI models that a lot of non-AI people don't realize is that the majority of them actually don't work. They don't, the technical word is they don't converge, meaning you take the data, you take a very, very complicated machine, and it doesn't go anywhere. So you have to imagine a sort of very complex AI model as like the cockpit of an airplane. Right. Assuming that you, the two of you guys aren't pilots, if I put you in the cockpit of an airplane, what are the odds that that with all the gadgetry and all the dials and all the complexity in an airplane cockpit, what are the odds that the thing actually takes off? I would say very, very low. Right. Even when very qualified AI professionals are at the helm of an AI model, the majority of AI models that are tried actually don't converge. So now, just think about this. So somebody is taking a $1 billion bet on a model that we don't know if it's going to go anywhere. And even in the best case scenario, even imagine that it converges. Imagine that we can train this model. Imagine that, look, it's amazing. How much money will you make with it? Will you really make, whatever, $4 or $5 billion on it to make it worth our while? Do you have a business model that supports that? All of those things are unanswered questions. So that really speaks to why somebody like Google or Microsoft or like companies like that don't weren't doing this before OpenAI was, because it's not a business case, right? This is not something that Goldman Sachs would do. This is not like it's not a cut and dried math where you just say, okay, we're going to spend $1 billion, we're going to make $5 billion. Done. We do it. No, we're going to spend $1 billion. You don't know if it's going to train or not. You don't know if it's going to make you money or not. You don't know how much money you're going to make. You don't know how good it's going to be. There's so many unknown questions. So it really takes like a very startup-y type of guy to really lead an effort to make it happen, a startup-y type of company. And that's really what OpenAI was, right? Sam Altman used to head Y Combinator before he went to OpenAI. He's a classic startup guy. You need people like that. You need a team like that to really lead an effort like that. And now, so that was a very long-winded way of saying that this is a special company in the world of AI. Right? OpenAI was a special company, special from several points of view, including the funky way in which it got started as a nonprofit, and then it moved to being a for-profit, and then it, so there's that sort of strange things happening in the governance of it at that level, and then there's the bets that they're taking. They're taking these huge bets with very unclear commercial outcomes. So I'm not sure what the dynamic is. On the board, I'm not sure what's going on, and you know, Sam's like a outsized sort of figure in that whole ecosystem, and I don't know what the dynamic is and what the board was thinking or any of those things. Sorry, I'm not giving you any answer. I'm just going to give you some insight into something interesting that I don't think is commonly understood.
No, that's exactly what we want. It's just such an interesting kind of level of insight. And you know, your background in AI is so fascinating. And I'm curious if it kind of informs any of the investing that you do at Cumberland Labs and sort of the incubation and any of the thought there. Are you looking for, you know, crypto adjacent and AI adjacent projects to invest in and incubate, or what do you look for?
Absolutely. The answer to your last question is yes. We always look for interesting projects. Personally, I am actually quite interested in the way that technology broadly is applied to solve real world problems. I think I mentioned this earlier when I was talking about my own companies. All of my own companies were all ones where AI was used, or blockchain was used, or technology was used to really solve a problem that people have in the real world. And that, I think, is where things become interesting for example, blockchain. There's a lot of effort right now in blockchain to say, what are the use cases? How will we use blockchain to solve problems that people have today? So blockchain has an interesting conundrum, right? If you take the narrow viewpoint that blockchain should solve people's problems, then the fact that there are these tokens that are created, either fungible or non-fungible, the fact that there are these tokens almost looks like an interesting happenstance, because that's not what sort of solves most people's problems. Because if you think about it, the tokens, fungible, non-fungible, whatever they are, there's 8 billion people in the world, 7 billion of them actually can't afford the tokens, fungible or non-fungible, right? So how will we solve the problem that a lot of people have using this amazing technology? Blockchain, I believe, represents probably some of the best technology of the last 30 years, right? And I say that as an AI guy. It is an amazing technology. It represents an amazing leap forward in what it can do. I'm happy to talk about that again in the context of Trust App. But this is an amazing technology. How will we use it to solve real-world problems that real-world people have? That is something that I'm passionate about. That is something that Cumberland Labs is passionate about. And if there are people out there who are working on problems, who have solutions, who are trying to figure these things out, we would love to work with them. We would love to support them in any way that we can.
Was there like an aha moment for you where maybe you saw something, whether it was like a deep fake or AI being used in a negative way, that was like, I need to be the one to combat these issues?
Definitely. I'm going to talk about Trust App for a second. I'm happy to come back to Cumberland Labs if you want, but talking about Trust App.
Feel free to dive in.
So talking about Trust App, the problem is actually misinformation and fake news, right? This has always been a problem from the very earliest days, right? 30 years ago, when I first got started with the internet in the early 90s, it was always an issue. You just didn't know what was what. You didn't know what to believe. And as humans, we bring sort of a trust that we have in institutions, in the printed word. You know, in the 70s or 80s, you would just believe whatever you read because it was largely produced by trusted parties, by large entities that you believed. It was by Dan Rather, or by New York Times, or whatever it is, you know, these big institutions, you believe them. And when people came to the internet, they brought their sort of belief system with them. So the instinct that most people have is to just believe whatever it is that they read. But very clear from the early days of the internet that that wasn't the case. And I think social media really brought that sort of this fact out that you really shouldn't believe everything that you read. Although most people still just, they'll pass on and they'll post whatever it is that they find without making any effort to see if it's true or not, if it's actually even remotely possible that is true, that, whatever, the earth is flat or whatever it is that people want to believe in. So for me, the aha moment came sort of early this year when it became clear that AI was really part of the problem. Right. Just fun fact for you guys. So as a scientist, I care deeply about facts, and I care very deeply that facts are established in a scientific way. Right? So the scientific way is to set up a hypothesis and then figure out if it's true or not. That's sort of the standard scientific way. So you can take any theory that you have, and it could be something simple or something complex. And then you break it down and you say, how will we address it scientifically? Right? That's something that I care deeply about, and that's something that I think the world does not do enough. Too much of the information out there is just sort of is what I would describe as sort of pablum, or maybe just people saying very bland things that don't make much sense with any amount of rigor. Given that I care deeply about science and I've worked on AI for 30 years, here comes AI, and now people are applying it to make misinformation worse, right? Now people are using AI. People are using my thing. I consider AI to be my thing. People are using the thing that I spent the last 30 years of to make the thing worse that I love. So I'm like, okay, no, this is not right. This is not. I can't just stand by and let this happen. So I really began thinking about what are the best technologies that we have today that we can bring to bear to really address misinformation and fake news. How can we help people stop posting things, stop saying things that just aren't true? Maybe we can't stop them, but at least we can discourage them. At least we can give them a little indicator. Look, this thing that you're about to say, they're not true, you know, not true according to experts on both sides of whatever spectrum that you believe in, and not true according to common sense things that just make sense. So that's really the genesis of Trust App. That's where we said, let's go after misinformation and fake news. Let's really make a concerted effort to see what is the best technology out there and how can we apply.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's fascinating. And it just, you know, like you said, I mean, with AI, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, with great power comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. And some people are using this technology for great ends. And some are using it for bad ends. Mm-hmm. And so Trust App is really trying to tip the weight or tip the scales in the favor of the good guys. And it's utilizing blockchain technology to do so. And so we kind of want to unpack that. Like, you know, you're a scientist, 30 years experience. I am a mere plebe. And my listeners are probably not as well versed in AI as you are. So try and dumb it down for us mere mortals. We want to understand how this works and how you're solving such a significant issue.
Absolutely. Happy to do that. So the two main headers in which the technology that we work on for Trust App resides are AI and blockchain. Okay. And I'm happy to go into each one of these individually. On the AI front first, it's very clear that what is true and what is not true can really only be established by the best AIs of what is out there right now. And so, for example, you say, guys, New York Times is reporting that Israel did bomb that hospital. There was a hospital bombing that happened a month ago that I'm referring to, which some of you, your readers may be right. familiar with. Well,
very controversial the way it was.
Right, exactly, very controversial, right? And so someone posts on Twitter, guys, the New York Times is reporting that Israel did bomb that hospital. Right? Now, that's a fact, or that's an assertion that is true or not true. Yes? And it's not difficult to establish that, right? Because either the New York Times is saying that or they're not saying that. So the approach that we're taking is using AI. Can we actually determine what are the assertions and what is being said that you are looking at in your feed? And can we look at the sources of news out there? Can we look at the sources of information out there to actually extract assertions from that? And can we match? Right? And can we match them from all different sources? So there are 18 sources that are saying that what you're saying is true. Okay. We think that it's more likely than not that what you're saying is true. 16 of the 18 sources are saying that are disagreeing with what you're claiming in your tweet. So we don't think it's true. So what we want to do is, if as a consumer, as a reader, as you're browsing your feed, we want to give you little indicators that just say, a little sign, a little green tick, a little red question mark, a little green tick that says, yes, we think that this is likely to be accurate, given that the sentiment here is in agreement with the vast majority of what is being said there, set out there, and or a little red check mark right there in your feed that says, okay, no, I don't think so. You know, just go check your sources. And by the way, the little check marks that I'm talking about, if you hover over our check marks, we open up a little window that shows you what our analysis is. So we give you a link to the original source. We tell you this is why we think this is questionable, or this is why we think it's accurate. Right? So we want to empower
you. You could just plug this into your browser, right? I mean, this is
exactly
anybody.
So it's used. Absolutely. So the first release of Trust App is a browser plugin, sort of like MetaMask or one of the other browser plugins, that enables users to just quickly assess the likelihood that the Facebook post that they're seeing or the Twitter post that they're seeing is actually true or not, or likely to be true or not.
Wow.
I'm curious to hear some of your experiences with everything that's happening in this like AI and deep fake space, because one of the popular new scams that I've seen pop up is this one, especially for people who have a public presence on the internet or on social media. It kind of listens to their voice and then recreates it, and it'll like call their loved ones or people of interest mm-hmm. and call them and act like this person. So for example, you know, me and Bryce, we're all over the internet. We now have all these podcasts and YouTube videos and etc. So what they do is that they'd send an AI model to listen and analyze our voice. And then it would call maybe our parents saying, hey, we need you to send us money. Or, hey, I need my social security number. I lost it. Can you give it to me? And then all of a sudden they go, oh, this sounds just like my son. Let me go ahead and just give them that. You know, come to find out, it's actually an AI or a deepfake that is recreating our voices. So I'm curious from your end, like, what are the popular new scams or ways that people are at risk here that they might not realize yet? And then how can they protect themselves from stuff like that?
So I can answer the second question, I think, much easier.
Absolutely.
Which is the quick answer is stop believing things that you read or that you messages that you receive. Stop believing most things on the internet is the honest answer. Because really what has happened is that AI and other types of technologies have really caught up to where technology should be. Right? This goes into the point that I was making earlier. We, as humans, and we can talk about this from a neuroscience perspective, from an evolutionary perspective. As a brain researcher, I can tell you why this makes sense. But we tend to be trusting a trusting species, right? We believe most things because from a long-term survival, from a longevity perspective, it actually makes sense that we should believe most things that we encounter. We should believe most humans say. Unfortunately, that's just not a world that we live in anymore. Given human intentions, given human plus AI together, the combined potential for harm, it is really important for everyone, including our parents and everyone around us, to just, first of all, take everything that you receive, and the default needs to be, yeah, not true. You're not buying it. You know, even if it's you, unless it's you in person and they have good reason to believe that it's you in person, they should not be believing anything that they receive. Right? Let's just start with that. Let's just start with and by the way, this is also the default scientific view. Yeah. So science begins with the sort of baseline of, yeah, we don't believe anything that is being said. Okay. Now, what evidence will it take to make us believe? Yes, that really, the world needs to be more scientific. The world needs to behave more like how true scientists behave, which is when you hear Newton's third law, the first thing that every scientist says is, yeah, not buying it, you know? Okay, what evidence is there for this? How will we collect evidence for this, right? And that's really, going back to your point about deepfakes and all of these things about AI, the question is, what systems can be put in place as a consumer to say, yeah, that really is Bryce, or no, not really Bryce, you know? Can we set up a challenge? Bryce says, can you send me your social security number? Okay, Bryce. What's my middle name? Or, okay, Bryce, what is something that only you or Bryce would know, you know? Like something, yeah. It's a personal version of a two-factor authentication, you know?
A little safe word.
Yeah, exactly, a little safe word. So something that only Bryce would know, you and Bryce would know. So that's really, again, it's a question of how will we prove something is true, or how will we prove that the views being expressed are the views of this person, absent them, just the person saying, yeah, I'm saying so. You know, mm-hmm. Neil deGrasse Tyson has this big thing about how eyewitness testimony is the least reliable thing in all of science, right? Somebody says, I saw an alien, the whole world of science is like, yeah, not buying it, you know? Meanwhile, if in the court of law, if somebody says, oh yeah, I saw him kill that person, everyone's like, yeah, okay, we believe you. And no, not buying it, you know? I think we're getting the world where sooner or later, courts are going to come to that point where we're going to stop believing in eyewitness testimony, because it really is, what one person sees or says, believes that they saw is not reliable, right? So let's build systems that actually are able to test assumptions and test this hypothesis. The hypothesis is, this is Bryce. How will we believe this?
I think AI will absolutely, in some form or fashion, change change law, right? Because like you said, I mean, you'll be able to prove that, you know, you can't trust a piece of media about you, because you'll be able to prove that, hey, like, look, I could create that same thing with AI or something very similar. It's crazy to think about what deep fakes are doing. And I see it now, you know, Brendan actually asked, like, what are some of the other scams that, you know, viewers could watch out for? I've seen these things all over the place. Fake Elon Musk, fake Bill Gates, their words in their mouth are saying, hey, send money to this Bitcoin wallet and we'll send you back double. It's a new promotion we're doing. You know, we're giving away all this stuff, right? People on the internet, they see it. They think, well, you know, how can this be fake, right? It's Elon Musk talking, saying, send Bitcoin to this address. I'll get double back or whatever. And it's just crazy how scammy and how good the scams are getting these days.
Absolutely.
So I mean, hopefully, you know, Trust App is something that we could recommend to our listeners because, you know, and hopefully Trust App does something to maybe mitigate against those fake giveaways or those, you know, spammy sort of YouTube links you might get to. You know, would Trust App kind of flag that and say, like, this is not the real Elon Musk? Or is there a way to kind of, you know, have Trust App alert people to where there might be suspicious activity with crypto-related media?
Absolutely. I think crypto is a great use case for Trust App as well, because crypto, as you are well aware, the advantage and sort of double-edged sword of crypto is that any transfers that are done are immediately final. So unlike the the U.S. banking system, where if you do a transfer and you find that the person was fraudulent, you have some time to take it back. In the world of crypto, you ain't taking it back. It's gone.
Right.
So crypto is a much better candidate for fraudsters for that reason, because I can really get away with a lot more. Unlike a bank, where people have more recourse to getting things back, people have more recourse to what they can do with the law and so on. And whether the crypto, it's gone. It's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing that I have full custody, I take full responsibility. So when I give my money to Brendan, when I give it to whoever, Sam Altman, it's gone now. I have no recourse of getting it back. If I made a mistake, oops. For that reason, crypto, I think, is a great first use case. And crypto people should be doubly aware of everything that can go wrong. And crypto should have better use cases of figuring out scammers. So I can easily imagine something like Trust App or a sister app to Trust App being built specifically to solve crypto problems. So Trust App is, we can talk about the roadmap for Trust App and where it goes from here, and how we are imagining that it goes. The use cases that you spoke about, which is sort of one-to-one interactions and figuring out if that really is Bryce and figuring out this problem, I think, A, it's a great problem to solve. Trust App doesn't solve it right now. But I think it's a great problem for someone to solve. And I think the world of blockchain can actually be used in an interesting way to solve the problem. Because blockchain can be used to recognize what is true and to mark what is true in interesting ways that you really cannot use any other conventional technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's going back to Bryce's point here. It's funny because I will have people that reach out to me and say, "Hey, I'm Bryce Paul. Have you ever listened to the Crypto 101 podcast?" And I'm like, "No way. I've never heard of something like that. Like, oh, tell me more."
It makes my stomach turn.
Yeah, I mean, all jokes aside, I think that we are stepping into this direction, kind of like what you're working towards over at Trust App, Naveen, where it's not exactly what you do now, but I can see someone kind of start to create that, whether it's you or whether it's someone else. We're starting to see some really useful applications to combat everything that we're seeing in this AI space. But I think the big thing that I want to kind of hit home on here is that for every 10 things that happen that are negative, we've talked about the negative a little bit in this podcast, there are 100 things that are positive. And so, I think what we can't do is overlook all the positive things that are happening, because there are so many great things happening in the world of AI and everything. And we can't focus too much on the negative, but there's a lot of stuff to be excited about.
Absolutely. And let me take that as a segue to talk about why blockchain is important for Trust App. Okay. Talking about the positive impact that blockchain has, right? This gets a little bit philosophical. So just give me a little bit of rope. I'll try to be sort of short about it. Right? In the world of Web 1, the foundation was a set of protocols that were built largely by academics and engineers who had no expectation of profitability. So, for example, TCP/IP was written by people at MIT who were funded by DARPA. HTTP was written by Tim Berners-Lee at CERN. Again, these were just researchers. SMTP was written by, it's not even clear who, but again, it said that's just a protocol. Now, on top of SMTP sits Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo Mail or Outlook, right? And so the application was separate from the protocol. And that's a very important distinction, that you use the same protocol, which is all the email providers use the same protocol, it's SMTP, but you can pick any provider you want, which is just fine. Now, you move into Web 2 about 10 years later, and you find that actually that distinction is gone. The platform is the protocol. So Twitter is a platform, but Twitter is also a protocol. So if you have been sending out tweets and you've sent out 10,000 tweets over the past 8 years, all those tweets exist only on that platform. If the government of Iran doesn't like what you say because they find it to be anti-Iran or whatever, and they reach out to Twitter, and the management team of Twitter agrees that, this is not right, they can just remove whatever it is that you've ever said, right? Let's say Elon leaves tomorrow, a new CEO comes in town, they implement a new policy, all of a sudden, a bunch of Twitter accounts are just gone. That content that has been created, it's just gone. It can be deplatformed at any point, right? So, and same thing is true of Facebook, right? The same thing is true of Instagram. It's true of any of these things. It's a very centralized operation. A few people are directly in control of every single thing that you say, every single thing that you do.
Proving it. The government's proving it in some of these investigations right now.
Absolutely, right? So the we have moved from a world where the platforms and the protocols were independent, and you could just pick any platform that you want, the protocol remained constant, to now where the platform is the protocol. And it's quite bad. It's quite bad from the point of view of information provenance. It's quite bad from the point of view of who will believe anything that you say, because it can just go away, right? Did Brendan or Bryce really say this? Twitter just decided to delete your account. Now it's gone. In my mind, Web3, among its many, many other features, one of them is it's a public good, and it remains, it's certified by all of us, and it remains forever. Nobody, if we put it out there that Bryce said this, nobody can ever say he didn't. There's no entity, there's no company, there's no individual, there's no committee that can come in and remove what Bryce said if we put it on chain. Right? That, to me, is a very important point and a very important facet of Web3, of what blockchain technology allows us to do. It allows us to really get in front of this idea of platform platform protocol sort of juncture and pull it apart and say, no, ain't doing it. The protocol is here. Per the protocol, this was said. Which platform it was set on is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. You set it on Twitter, you set it on Facebook, you set it on your personal website. It doesn't matter. You put it on a phone record, you put it in a Telegram chat, does not matter. We have recognized that this was said and nobody can ever deny it. You know?
Yeah, so that's kind of like a Bitcoin transaction, right? Like if it's got all those six confirmations, you've broadcast that transaction, everybody attests to that truth. If you run your own node, I mean, you as well, you have a copy of that ledger, of that canon, of that consensus, of that singular version of truth that everybody else is agreeing on. That's reality, right? Whereas like in the banking system or whatever, you could send transactions back and forth and they could get refuted, they could get censored. If there's centralized actors in between, they might, lose the wire, whatever, in kind of blockchain. I love the there's a consensus mechanism. It's kind of reminds me of what you're talking about as well.
Exactly the point, which is let's use blockchain. So in the world of Trust App, we use blockchain as a way, as a technology to establish consensus that something occurred. We are using all of us as a way to say this is content that cannot be un-deplatformed, I think is the word that I want, which is it cannot ever be deplatformed. Yes, you can never remove it. You can never cancel it. It's been said. So in the world of Trust App, we are doing two things. First, we are taking pieces of content and we're actually putting them on chain. This is true for everything that we're capturing right now, but we want to keep doing it into the future, and it becomes ever more important as the facts that we are collecting interest at become sparser and more difficult to more difficult to represent in centralized places. So, for example, if it's a Telegram chat or if it's something that a citizen journalist has pointed out, we will we want to create a system where it can be minted and it can be put in stone and say, okay, this was recognized. This is true. This person was there. They saw it. They posted a video, whatever it is. And we've established by whatever means we have that that actually happened. That wasn't just AI saying this. It was like nine independent people who took different videos. And we have ways of establishing that they were in the right place at that time. They all saw it. Whatever our way of establishing consensus is, we can establish consensus about something that happened. And we are putting it on chain. And now it's done.
It's kind of like it's kind of like a blockchain version of Twitter's community notes. Like they just rolled out this new feature called community notes, where you know posts you know could have other people kind of check them and basically say, hey, like this is actually not confirmed or this is confirmed and all that kind of stuff, which I think is pretty interesting. And so yeah, Trust App takes that a next level further. But I kind of wanted to ask one other question, kind of on the subject of AI, but you know, kind of like how we were talking about running your own nodes, always having a copy of the ledger, always being able to prove, you know, some people I hear are starting to run their own like AI models, like their own private, like, well, I'm not going to rely on Google Bard. I'm not going to rely on ChatGPT, you know, GPT-4 or whatever. I'm going to run my own. What is that? Like, is how does somebody even start doing that? And do you think that that's like, you know, maybe they're a little paranoid? Or do you think it's a legitimate cause?
Not only do I think it's a legitimate cause, I think it's actually a requirement. So here's the way. Again, this is something coming from an AI guy. This is something that isn't talked about that much. Okay. So let's take two steps back from this actual question, and let's look at these models. So ChatGPT, Bard, all of these models. Right? You take the entire set of internet data. Right? What is the data that the model has been trained on? It's everything that's out there. Right? It's everything that's out there. And you train a model that can do a number of things. Okay, so it's a very generalist thing. Right? It's a very generalist thing. You have to think of any of these AI models like ChatGPT or Bard as like a general human being, right? It's a general human being that's good at most things, but it's not particularly excellent at any given thing, right? So, for example, any general human being will actually not be very good at playing table tennis or at running. Why? Because to be good at running, you need to run a lot, right? You need to actually be a trained runner. Right? You need to be running many hours a day for a long period of time. That's how you become good at running. Right? So going back to AI, if you want an AI that's good at X, whatever X is, let's say X is playing chess, right? Or X is, pick a topic, whatever it is, right? You need to actually train an AI model that is specifically trained for that specific use case. Okay, so and the way you do that is you take one of these more general purpose models like GPT-4 or actually it has to be one of these open source models like Llama 2 or a lot of these like now I'm blanking on a name, but there's a new 7 billion model that just came out. There's a lot of these open source models that are being released. So Yann LeCun is releasing a lot of these models at Meta, entirely open source. You release the model open source, now it's available. Right, so now all 7 billion parameters are available, and now you can use your custom data to fine-tune it. You don't need to fine-tune all 7 billion parameters. You can fine-tune maybe 1%, maybe 7 million or 70 million, depending on how much data you have, how much custom data you have. And that's the equivalent of taking a human and letting them run a lot so that they become good at running. Yeah. So, for example, in our use case, If we want a model that is actually good at, let's say, picking out if someone's really talking about X, whatever X is, let's say someone's really good at talking about, or someone's implying that this attached content is from CNN, right? Some specific use case. No existing AI chatbot model is actually going to be excellent at it. They will all be okay at it. Maybe they'll all be 80% accurate or 70% accurate. And that's enough to impress most people. But that's actually not enough for any specific use case, right? That's like being able to run a 5-hour marathon, right? It's probably impressive to a lot of people, but that's not going to be impressive if you really want to be good at running marathons, right? So now you need to take your data, you take one of these open source models, and you start fine-tuning it. That is neither easy nor simple. Because if you go back to the point I was making earlier, that's really like taking sitting in a cockpit and saying, this plane will take off now. Well, you need to be really good at this. Right? You need to really be able to take these 7 billion parameters and figuring out how many of them you need to fine-tune, how will you do it, what's your strategy, how will any of this work? So you have to fine-tune the model, and now you have a model that's good at what you wanted to do, right? At this point, now that's the, and what I'm describing is the basic requirement if you want to be sort of a kick-ass AI company today or have a kick-ass AI model that is specific to a use case that you're solving for, right? So you take one of these open source models, you fine-tune it, now you're good to start.
Well, Naveen, we really appreciate you coming on here and enlightening the masses, truly. I think that this will be something, and we're going to start seeing verification sources like TrustApp being integrated into all sorts of daily websites, wallets, crypto wallets, exchanges, news outlets. And it's sad to say that, it's sad to kind of admit that we can see a world where we need to have these third-party sources verifying everything that we do, from websites to wallets to exchanges to news to et cetera.
Hey, it's digital self-defense, right? I mean, that's kind of what it is. It's necessary.
Absolutely. So I'll just in a couple of minutes, I'll describe to you a vision of where TrustApp goes and a vision of where TrustApp's sister companion, which we are now imagining here in this podcast, that doesn't exist right now, right? So Alpha for people here who want to start their next company. So we are imagining TrustApp to be sort of like Grammarly for facts, right? So you guys are familiar with Grammarly. It's a company that puts little squiggles below your text and says, fix your grammar here, right? Not the spell, but also grammar. We are imagining a Grammarly for facts. You are about to do something, you're about to put some content out there, you're about to write a blog post, you're about to publish something, and you're saying a number of things in there, and we can just go in and check and say, yeah, true, true, yeah, not true. So we're putting a little squiggle below it saying, the correct thing is this. Singapore did not become independent in 1968, it actually became independent in 1967. Right? Or whatever it is, whatever your factoid is. Clinton was not the 41st president, actually 42nd president. Right? Most facts are actually not controversial, but people just don't care. They're just putting whatever content out there. Right? So you can imagine, and then you can become specific at this thing. The New York Times is actually not reporting that Israel bombed that hospital. Right? So you can put a little squiggle below. Now, you can easily imagine a version of this for crypto. You can easily imagine a version of this that actually plugs into a wallet and you're about to send, you received a request from Bryce saying, dude, crisis, send me 0.5 ETH or whatever it is, right? How about we make an app that puts a little squiggle below it and says, actually, that's not Bryce's address,
Yeah.
At least not any address that we know that he uses, just something simple like that, right? Is it even likely that that's Bryce's address? Where have you seen Bryce? The last two times we sent money to Bryce, it was these addresses. What about this? Are you sure? We won't stop you, but we'll put a little squiggle below it and put a little warning there, saying, just be aware.
It'd be great to have something like that, something to have our back, a little digital shield in the world of. Everybody's after everybody. Everybody's coming after your money. Everybody's coming after you for one way or another, which, that's just the way the world works. But unfortunately, Naveen, we are coming up on time here. We couldn't thank you enough for spending the afternoon here with us and for giving us so much incredible knowledge on the intersection of AI and blockchain, talking to us a lot about Cumberland Labs, the work and the investing that you guys are doing there, along with the incredible system that you built at Trust App. So with that being said, where can people kind of follow you, stay in touch, maybe even download the app when it becomes ready to rock and roll?
So the app, you can just search for it. It's Trust App with two P's. It's coming online in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be available in the Google Play Store as a Chrome extension. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm not terribly active, but that is where I'm starting to become more active now on topics around AI and around blockchain. It's NAVAGNI. So the first three letters and the last four letters of my last name.
Wonderful. And AGI, Artificial Generalized Intelligence, also kind of a nice little play there.
Absolutely.
Naveen, thank you so much. We hope to have you back again soon to talk about some more exciting things.
Happy to, guys. Thank you so much.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.